Welcome to Marketgy. Grab some coffee and let's talk about what's working in marketing, who these strategies are designed for, and how to be customer-centric while we do it.
Hey there, this is Leanne with Marketgy. Today I'm joined by Mike Rizzo, who is nothing short of amazing. You've probably heard of him. We have like 300 something mutual connections. So if you know me, you know him. And I hope someday if you know him, you know me. Mike, tell us more about yourself.
Well, hey, everybody. I'm Mike Rizzo. I'm the CEO and founder of MarketingOps.com, the official home of the MoPros community, which is a community full of marketing operations professionals. I started this thing way back in 2017, and it really took off. We have about 6,000 members today, and we host conferences, and it's really all about elevating marketing operations nerds and making sure that they feel supported and connected and have career growth opportunities and all of the above.
I love it. And that's something that really has taken a hold, is this defined MarTech MOPS kind of position and role and function within like our organizations from earlier and earlier on. So today's big question is like, how do we define it? And is marketing operations marketing? Like where does this fall? So what are your two cents on this?
Yeah. I did a post a handful of weeks ago that said marketing ops isn't marketing. Thoughts? And I did not expect the world to be set on fire the way that it was. A lot of folks would be like, hey, what are you talking about, you dummy? It's literally in the name, marketing, right? Marketing ops. My thoughts are, it is so much more than just marketing. And part of the reason for the post was to stir up conversation. Thankfully, it did exactly that. It was a way for me to try to say, hey, let's try not to just think about it only as marketing. Because at the end of the day, marketing operations is much more than just your traditional sort of like four P's and like understanding ABM and all of the things that go into just like marketing as a practice. It is so much more about managing the people and the process that enable a go-to-market function. And so my position is that, yes, it's marketing, but it is ultimately a product management kind of a job where your product is made up of many products and your job is to figure out how to understand your users' needs. So those are your internal stakeholders a lot of the time, but they're also your buyers of your products and services, your literal customers that are buying products and services from your company. It's your job to understand their needs and establishing a process for them to have a really efficient and effective, you know, buying experience, right? And so now you have to figure out, okay, well, here's this go-to-market landscape, the things that we need to do to be able to reach our customers, have them engage with us, and our team needs to be able to do the exact same thing, reach our customers, have them engage with us, and we need to be able to track it. We have all these tools. So I need to understand all of the requirements so I can build out a technical roadmap of how do I do that? How do I enable this business to have an effective go-to-market, you know, tech stack, right? And so my argument is that it is marketing. There are foundational things you need to know about marketing, but it isn't marketing. It is so much more than that. And I'm trying to protect the role a little bit by trying to establish like some boundaries around what is marketing operations.
Awesome. I mean, I think that as you were speaking, I thought about the evolution of marketing in general, right? Because where it was, you know, 2, 3, 4 years before in like, we'll call it 2013. We'll just pick out a year. In 2013, it was not nearly as technical. And the tech stack that you were using was much more rudimentary. It was like MailChimp had like one feature. It was sending an email to a list. And the way that the landscape is today is that the entry level stakes are so much more technical and the tools that you use aren't just like, oh, I'm going to send out an email and this will do it instead of me copying and pasting a list. Like that's not what it is anymore. Mm-hmm. And to have somebody that is not just tech savvy, but like systems thinking and operations, and kind of taking that to like one step further, the guardian of the execution of your brand, you know, because that's a lot of it too.
100%. 100%.
So what I'm hearing is that this doesn't really fit into, like, this isn't IT's job. This isn't sales's job. This isn't business analysts. This isn't their job. It's its own bubble. How does that play into, like, a traditional marketer kind of feeling like you're taking some of their pie? Do you think that happens?
It does. Yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, so... Gosh, being in marketing operations, I will say for the earlier part of my career, right? Like there's actually, let's just take me out of the equation for a moment. Like categorically speaking, our community talks a lot about, hey, I would love to have a seat at the table, right? I want to be brought into the conversations earlier. I'd like to help devise strategy. I'd like to be able to help you sort of think through the things that you're working on. And sometimes that can, depending on, you know, the way you build relationships with your organization, whether it's marketing or sales or whatever departments that you're trying to enable, sometimes that can come across like you're stepping on somebody's toes, right? Whereas particularly earlier in your career, where you're trying to like navigate maybe how do I have this conversation and not sound like I'm somehow over prescribing like the next thing that we should do, or the inverse of that, where you're constantly like, well, no, we can't really do that, right? Like in marketing operations, we say no a lot, and it's not because we want to. It's just that there's like, there are limitations, right, to being able to do certain things. And so I do think that there's the risk of sort of feeling like you're stepping on somebody's toes, or, you know, potentially, you know, taking over a little bit of like the marketer's job, what have you. But I think that that's where your job as if you think about like a product manager kind of function, is to say, hey, no, tell me what it is that you're looking to accomplish, because all I really want to do is like support whatever it is that you want to do, right? And as long as we have the budget and the resources and my backlog isn't going to get, you know, kicked down or whatever, right, I'm going to do whatever I can to enable you to be able to execute on whatever your vision is from a go-to-market perspective. So I do think it ultimately, you know, as I said earlier, this is about aligning people to a process and then looking at the technology. So your job is to just understand like what are the inputs and what's the sort of executional process that we should go through to then go use the tools that we have to be able to make that happen. Right. So you can navigate that, but yeah, it does feel a little dicey sometimes, depending on like, you know, the former relationship or maybe the one that doesn't exist yet, et cetera.
So. Yeah. I mean, the way that I see it is that the MOP's role is the person that sets up, like, for example, an email workflow. And the marketer's job is to like provide the copy, or maybe like lead the conversation about the cadence or things like that. And that it's a dialogue instead of a tug of war. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, one of the themes I heard you just kind of pull out was like the inputs, but also the whole jobs to be done Kool-Aid, that if you haven't drank it, maybe you should. Yes. Because I think that influences a lot of these conversations.
Yeah, 100%. You know, earlier you were talking about, hey, this isn't like IT's job, right? This isn't the analyst's job to figure out. It's sort of its own little bubble. You're spot on. There's a job to be done, and you need to define what that is. And setting roles and responsibilities is critical in any organization, right? But just understanding like, hey, what are you looking to accomplish? How can we get alignment? Let's build some documentation and ensure that we're aligned, write it down and sign off on it, right? Like that's a really good way to say, hey, we're aligned on these things. You as a marketing operations professional are in a really good, or RevOps professional, whatever your title you're choosing to take on these days. You're in a very unique position to be able to translate sort of like the business language and the business motion to technology, And that's why it's not like this IT person's job to figure out some of this stuff, or the business analyst side or whatever, right? Like, you are uniquely positioned to understand everything that's happening before the people even enter your funnel, right? Setting up UTM tags and tracking scripts and all of those things and naming conventions to be able to understand the data as it's ingested. And then watching the entirety of that funnel, right? Are people moving through it at the rate that you expect? You're getting alignment on, is, do we call it an MQL or an SQL? Do we use all these different terms, right? Even down to when they become a customer. And are they renewing? And you're working alongside your customer success teams and your sales ops teams to understand that part of the buying cycle so that you can report back to your marketing team, here's what seems to be working. Here's where our best customers come from, right? And here's the ones that are renewing and upgrading and upselling. And you're sort of communicating across the entirety of that funnel. That is super unique to your visibility across the go-to-market tech stack. Like, people need to understand, like, not everybody has that lens, right? So it's really exciting.
Yeah. And I think that specific lens and that following through the cycle is so pivotal to the success of any go-to-market strategy, any campaign, any of it. And as someone who was like labeled growth or labeled, you know, different things, is that I just care about, are we finding the right people? Are we looking at the right places? Are we putting budgets and things that are going to matter? And are we fulfilling on the promise that we brought them in under? Mm-hmm. And you can't do that without those data points or without understanding how to operationalize that. Otherwise, it's just hopes and dreams.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, you know, going back to sort of what we were talking about at the beginning of this call, right? Is marketing ops marketing or not? And all this other stuff. When I say I want to sort of protect the role of a marketing operations practice, it's that when, you know, we've all watched the landscape change, particularly in the tech sector over the last 2 years, right? There was like rounds of funds are no longer available and layoffs and, you know, RIFs and restructuring, all those things. If an organization accidentally lumps the marketing operations person into the category of marketing, and they're like, hey, we need to cut back on the marketing team, they've just lost one of their core, you know, managers of the go-to-market tech stack. At some point, someone will go, how does all this work? How does this whole product, set of products work? Because now we don't have the person that knows how to make this work. And you are going to set yourself up with a nightmare of tech debt if you just start hacking away at it, right? You wouldn't, like said differently, right? We want to protect them from being lumped into a category that sort of misconstrues the value to the organization, whether that's the value to the marketing team or RevOps or the business at large. So you want to try to understand the value of that particular practice area. But if you were building a SaaS product, you wouldn't just like let go of your engineers, right? Like you wouldn't let go a ton of engineers and have basically a ghost staff, like a skeleton crew, right? To try to run a SaaS product. Like you need someone to actually manage it. You have to start looking at like, hey, this person is critical to being able to enable our team to understand what's working, what's not, and keeping track of that entire system. So that's what I kind of meant by like protecting the role, but also like driving that alignment and being able to like translate between the teams. It's like, well, you said this, so this is how we're reporting on it, right? Yeah. Sorry, I'm like kind of beating the drum.
Oh, you should. That's the whole point of this episode, is to beat this drum specifically. And I think that where, once again, it's unique from like just traditional operations is that it is very much an operational thing, but it is very much a revenue driver. And there's a difference between a passive, like, yeah, we help it so business happens, and if it breaks, then business stops happening. There's a difference between like participant and driver. And I see a MOPS role as a very like co-pilot. We'll call it a co-pilot. We're just going to go with that analogy. I'm a co-pilot for revenue growth, because mm-hmm. it's not just, yeah, you know, without Marketo or blah, 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 or whatever, like we would have a really hard time like operationally working. It's we would have a really hard time driving new growth. And that's a very different problem that still essentially results in, you know, dead on arrival, which nobody wants.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I agree with that for the most part. We do an annual study to benchmark the industry on sort of what we refer to as the state of marketing operations, state of the MOPRO. And it's everything from how are you measured, who are you reporting to, you know, and what are your salary ranges, you know, all of the things. One of the KPIs that is always bubbling to the top is it relates to pipeline. So you're right in that, like, they're very closely aligned to revenue and pipeline. But what worries me about that, to our earlier part of the conversation, is you aren't actually the marketer that's like coming up with net new campaigns, right? You're not figuring out, like, it's your job to sort of analyze, in my humble opinion, it's your job to analyze the performance of efforts and understand the measures by which you want to understand the effort. Right? Like setting a strategy and an alignment for how to measure the effort is what you can enable. The decision tree on did that work or not and what should we do next isn't necessarily your burden to bear, right? You can present the data, say this is how we agreed we were going to report on the data. This is the system we established to do that. We sort of trained you and shared that this is how we're going to do that to enable you. But at the end of the day, the marketing team and the sales team and the go-to-market function came up with the strategies to enter new markets or sell new products. And so when our KPIs say that one of the key performance indicators and measures for a revenue or marketing operations professional, rather, on our research is like at the top of the list is pipeline, I'm like, I really, really hope that that's really about is the ability to reach the top of the funnel into the next stage being enabled through efficient and effective measures, right? So these are things like we're enriching the data. We're making sure the lead reaches the sales rep in X amount of time. We're measuring that the sales rep has the ability to follow up and is following up within X amount of time, right? The marketing team is able to categorically look at a market and understand, is it filling the funnel with the right kinds of leads? Therefore impacting pipeline, but not, hey, I was responsible for generating 100 MQLs last month. Like that's not your responsibility, right? You're an enablement function, a critical strategy enablement function for supporting that. And you're establishing the measures by which that can be measured. But yeah, so like, yes, I agree.
Good. You want to define that, right? Because that's what happens in organizations is it's a slippery slope. Where roles might have been like defined when you're like hiring talent, but over time it starts to creep and scope creep, whether you're a consultant or you're in-house or you're in a role is a very real thing where suddenly you're doing like three people's jobs and you need to be like, hey, you know what? This really wasn't my thing, my project, my, you know, part of my job to do this. And so this is really the right way to use me. Maybe you need more support here. Now, in lean times such as these, that's a really real like pain point that people are feeling is suddenly they're not sure if they're marketing or mops or, you know, whose campaign is it and who, you know, are they project management? Are they, you know, and so these are the types of things that are happening on a very real day-to-day basis. As
100%.
You know, was it sales' job to go into Apollo and do this or was it yours? yeah. You know, like and so the conversation doesn't end, I think, about making sure that there's clear definitions.
Yeah, it doesn't. And look, like I'm fortunate now to be in this sort of seat of, you know, leading a business and, you know, the CEO type of role, right? Where I'm like trying to figure out how to scale myself, trying to figure out how to build better programs that allow our community to have more success and get what they need and not allow me to be the bottleneck, which translates super well from a marketing operations background, because like that is ultimately like you are trying to not be a bottleneck, right? So Apollo as an example, right? You should probably train the reps on how to best leverage Apollo, or work with your sales ops team to make sure that they know what's coming into Apollo back and forth and how the systems are talking to each other so that they can do product training, right? Because it's not efficient for you to do every single cadence push and upload and list pull and all that stuff, right? It's better that they're enabled to be able to do that. It allows the business to move faster and generate more pipeline. So yeah. And look, I also want to be like super clear about you in this role being still a marketer, right? Like nobody's saying that you shouldn't offer up a good idea, right? If you see something and you're like, hey, like maybe we should try this. It's one team, one dream, right? So, like, it's okay for you to come up with ideas too, as long as there's a clear understanding that like that was just you contributing an idea and maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. But you know, you're not sitting there saying like, hey, I want to be, unless that's your goal, I want to be the driving force behind every single go-to-market effort we do. If that's your goal, good on you. But like, you know, work together. It's a team, right? And just set, like you said, like we've been saying this whole episode, right? Just set the boundaries and make sure everybody understands roles and responsibilities, and then just be a team player, right?
Yeah. I mean, like the fact of the matter is if you can't play well with others and you can't have a kind conversation or give like thoughtful feedback, then you're really cutting your potential short. And that of your company. You know, I think of all the skills that any of us need to have is active listening. And then being able to collaborate without like in a proper way, mm-hmm. instead of a many plethora of ways in which it could go askew. But at the same time, self-awareness to lean into your own strengths, and that kind of curiosity about their goals and your goals so that you can move the needle forward. Because if you're in MOPS because you do not want to do anything creative and you just really are a very quantitative person, awesome. That's great. This is a really good fit for you, I think, personally. And you know, lean into that. But if you're a little bit of both, you can still be a little bit of both and provide feedback, but then say, like, this is my core competency.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And you know, on the leaner times, when I got my first job as a marketing operations manager at a startup, I found myself reading copy for an email that I was building and going, none of that makes any sense. Like, why are we doing this? And then having to like push it back up the funnel. And rather than, I mean, yes, I got frustrated. Let's be real. I'm human. And I was like, this is terrible. What are we doing? But rather than like continuing to just be like sort of begrudgingly building out these emails that I'm frustrated with, I eventually learned, because I was pretty young, right? I eventually learned how to sort of navigate that conversation and say, hey, let's set up a better system. I know we're all sort of like running lean, but at the front end of this process, let's just set up a better system so that by the time it gets to me to go build, I don't feel like somehow the checks and balances weren't in place and I'm seeing things that just don't make sense, right? I shouldn't even have to read the copy at this point. You know, it should just be sort of a copy paste and more or less hit send, right? I'm sure usually you have one person look at it, but those are real examples, right? That happens. And it's about figuring out the better way forward, right?
Yeah. And to your point is that if you're starting in any role, starting to have like a really big friction point, that point is ripe for finding a better solution or process. That means something's broken and it needs to be optimized, whether it needs to be automated, there needs to be additional people, like talent, steps, time, whatever it is, if you're starting to get like recurringly frustrated about the same thing, then that's an opportunity.
Yeah. And a really good one.
A great one. Because, and especially as we get all this, you know, bringing it back to tech, we have so many more tools now. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're getting emails and you're like, look, you're talking about renewals and this email is not a renewals email. It's not what you're telling me to send it. It is so irrelevant, you know, and it's got like five typos and bad grammar. Well, okay, there's like three tools that you can use to kind of filter that so that it takes it from a mishap into a new process that you've now optimized that is now going to make everything beyond just that one specific circumstance. Like, hey, maybe we need to have Hemingway editor, or we need to have Grammarly check for tone, or maybe we need, you know, there's just even ChatGPT, you can feed it and be like, hey, does this make sense for this thing? You know, you have options to improve.
Yep. And it's it comes down to, again, like from our research, project management, you even mentioned the term earlier, right? Are you a project manager, et cetera, right? Among the top tools that are used to do the job in marketing operations, like the handful that were at the top were all project management products, right? We saw Asana, we saw Rike, we saw Jira, we saw ClickUp. You know, spreadsheets naturally ended up being like one of the biggest ones that are done to do the job as well. But yeah, at the end of the day, it comes down to sort of like the people and the process, which ultimately comes down to resource management from the staffing side and the projects and the way in which you sort of deploy those. Because if those checks and balances are in place and you've established a really good campaign operations framework for, hey, it sounds like you want to do this thing. Well, who is it going to go to? And you've done some product training to your marketing team or your sales team or whoever that says, like, here are the general audiences and the ways in which we can cut them up very easily. Here's the established lists we have. Here's the options to go build new lists, right? If they know that that is in front of them, sort of the art of the possible pieces, then you can create a sort of, you know, process on the project management side to ingest the request for a net new campaign. And there's really good checks and balances in place now to then say, great, we're going to send this to the right people. I don't have to go hunt down whoever it was that came up with this idea to be like, wait, you wanted to send this to the renewals list or the churn list or the, what was it? You know, those are all critical to the function and just like, again, pipeline, revenue, supporting the business, all of the above. So,
yeah, that's a really great example. And I like the specific call out about like just the types of tools that are used, right? Because once again, it's still a technical landscape and mm-hmm. it didn't used to be. But at the same time, the ways that you can use project management tools to make your operations and workflows smoother, I mean, I said it unironically that a good project management tool is my love language. And I still mean it. Like if we can all engage on this one thing and create workflows that make sense, like we'll all get along better and it'll all feel better for all of us. And that's especially so when you have things that are cadences or time-based or net new and you have to filter through other departments. I worked in a lot of roles where legal and compliance has to see things first for good reason. Mm-hmm. And if things aren't orderly, then it's just not going to happen very well. So when we're thinking of like a defined MOPS role, I kind of want to come back to like how you mentioned in a startup, it was one way. Is there any like, situations where having a defined MOPS person just doesn't make sense? Like if it's too early or it's too late, I don't know if too late is such a thing, but I mean,
you know, I was super excited when Dave, like for those of you that if you're familiar with Dave Gerhart, He's pretty well known in the marketing space. And there was a post probably 2 years ago now or something. He shared that one of the first hires he would make is a marketing operations person to build out his team. I would say the only reason that it can be too early for a marketing operations hire is purely just like the needs of the business feel like there needs to be more of a push into the market at a faster rate. MOPs inevitably will sort of like, they seek to speed things up in an effective way, in an efficient way, so that you can measure what's working, but it is going to slow down to speed up, right? And a MOPs person, if you hire them as this like multi-hat, multifaceted person, and they tend to skew more on the MOPs side. So imagine you've got one marketing role. You're like, do I hire MOPs or do I hire sort of a demand person? If that person tends to skew more MOPs, then the business leaders might be like, hey, we're not going fast enough. In which case that would feel like it's a little too early. But if the leadership can understand that establishing some good foundations for slowing down to speed up, then it's always the right time to hire a MOPS person and make sure that you can build something that scales. Again, like if you wanted to build a software product, you're going to go reach out to the experts first, right? You probably don't know the first thing about which language to write it in or which servers to host it on, or whether you do like sharding or how you like split up the load across all of the development tech stack, right? These are things that you shouldn't be expected to know. And someone who understands how to build products does know. So you hire them for that expertise. You should think about your go-to-market tech stack in the same manner, right? Like it isn't your job to fully know how all these tools can be used, but it is your job to say, here's what I'd like to accomplish and how do I go about doing that? And you hire the experts to go build that product, right? That platform. You just have to know that there's a trade-off. Maybe you're not going to generate 150 top of funnel leads this week, right? You know, maybe you will, but.
Well, yeah. And I think that even if you're not able to bring someone in-house for it, then you do need to have a really good consultant, because a mistake I've seen and a pain that I've felt was that there wasn't any like thoughtful attribution journey, and UTM codes were like a mystery. And
yeah.
And if you are embarking on any sort of digital ad campaigns, then you need to at least have a consultant for how you're going to continue to champion getting budget to do that. Because you know what your CEO doesn't want to hear was, yeah, we spent 50 grand on that. Okay, cool. So what was the result? I don't know. A bunch of people clicked on it. Did they? So what, did they turn into business? Did we make money off that? Or was it just, you know, spent for the sake of spending? Which, right. You know, completely different conversation about branding. You know, there is some top of funnel spending that you do need to do. But
100%.
But at the same time, you can still put a UTM code on a brand.
You definitely can. You definitely can. And I think over time, what's what's nice about having a tight partnership in your marketing operations function is, especially those that have been around the block for a little while, right? You might get an opportunity to look at something where your demand gen person comes to you. And so this is like a real world example of a recent engagement I had. So they're showing me this report of how they're looking at the leads that came from HubSpot to Salesforce, right? And they're showing like campaign attribution type of stuff and the way that they're thinking about the data. And I saw very similarly to you, I saw this like really big spend for like effectively, you know, one deal or something. I was like, hey, I don't know if that's going to look that great. Like, are you sure you want to present it in this way? I'm not saying that it's wrong to be truthful about how much money was spent on this, but in the context of how you're presenting all of this information right now, the positioning is such that you're comparing these programs from an opportunity generation perspective, and that might not be your intent. As a matter of fact, that person was like, oh, actually, you're right. That particular like effort was exactly what we expected, right? We didn't expect to get a ton of pipeline out of this. And so when it was thrown into the mix of these other ones that were performing really well, it diluted the point, right? Like it actually like made it look like, oh, why did we do that? So I think as you establish the foundations of how to measure your go-to-market efforts and you're working alongside your partners on the demand gen and sales side, it's important to sort of be that sounding board and say, try to think about what might somebody see from looking at, you know, this, because inevitably they get really close, just like we get really close to our builds on the tech side. We need somebody to QA our work, right? You just need a second set of eyes. And if you establish those sort of measurement principles, you can be a really good partner in that regard.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really great example, because sometimes, you know, things do just get lumped in because there's spend on it, and not all spend is equal. And, you know, I think that that's an important conversation to have, especially when we're early on, right? Because if you're working with a really lean team, then you're probably under quite a bit of required output. And it's easy to kind of have things slip through the cracks unintentionally, or just at first glance.
Yep, 100%.
All right. So we talked about what MOPS is not, and we think that pretty much everybody should care about this. You know, and kind of said when it's too early, and I mean, there's not a too late, guys, is the gist of it. In order right. for it to get to be too late, you needed to have a MOPS person.
Yeah. Yeah. You should always have somebody. And if you don't yet, it's not too late. It's just the time is now.
Yeah. The time is now. It's like real estate. The best time to buy real estate was yesterday. The best time to have somebody set up your tech stack was yesterday.
Yeah. For sure.
Let's see. I always like to ask like the questions of, you know, is there an anecdote about something that you get like personally fired up about? Like if it, maybe it's a, you know, Peter Griffin that grinds my gears kind of thing. But what is it that is going to like stir the pot besides necessarily calling MOPS marketing? Like, let's drill down. What is something that happened recently where you're like, no, I care a lot about this?
Goodness. I care a lot about, I would say right now, I care a lot about the alignment between it's tough. Like I'm going to say MOPS and finance, but it's more than that. I was very fortunate to sit in the room with CFO Alliance folks at a breakfast in Orange County, here near my home, just a handful of months ago. And it was fascinating to hear that they are challenged by all the same things that we're challenged by in marketing operations. They literally used all the same sort of terminology and just general ways of describing their pain points. And the literal buck stops with finance, right? Like, and so I'm really passionate about driving more shared understanding of those practice areas in finance and how the marketing operations, revenue operations teams can better communicate to that part of the organization, because they're actually pretty hungry for it. And frankly, they're well suited to adopt a lot of the sort of systems, right? So like taxonomies and categorization of revenue and recognizing revenue in very particular ways and understanding how billing cycles work. Like they're thinking in terms of systems in much the same way that we are in marketing ops, nay, rev ops, right? And so I'm pretty passionate about that particular topic right now because, you know, again, over the last couple of years, we just watched a lot happen in the ecosystem of tech and layoffs and all that stuff. And I think it's a great way for you to build a really fruitful career for you, whether you're in marketing ops proper today, sales ops, CS ops, or going into the direction of rev ops. The more you understand about how a business makes money, the sort of like underlying principles of that, not like we sell a widget and then we make money, right?
Right.
There's so much more that goes into understanding finance, and you don't need to be an expert, but you should understand some of the basics there. The more you can do that, you will have ample opportunity to align strategically to your executive leadership and your leaders at large, and be a friend to your finance team and your CFO, who I'm sure most of us are like, oh, I gotta go make a budget request for this new piece of software because someone said we needed it, and now I have to figure out how to make the case to the CFO. It's like, well, if you already had a relationship, you probably could have a much healthier conversation about this, right?
Yeah. Okay, so I don't know if you know this about me, but I think you just explained the entire reason how I ended up getting an MBA.
Really? Okay.
So I started off, my undergrad was a healthcare services one. So all of my peers went on to be like doctors, nurse practitioners, physical therapists, occupational therapists. I finished undergrad knowing that it was not a terminal degree. Like everyone's expecting you to go get some sort of master's. I looked at my options. I was like, you know what? It doesn't matter what I'm doing if I don't know how to make it a successful business. Mm. Like, I got to be able to pay rent. I got to be able to pay work. Like, how am I going to pay for life if I have no idea these business fundamentals because I was stuck in, you know, all these heavy, like, science labs. And I love biology. I love my nerdy stuff. You cannot pry it from my cold, dead hands. But I needed to learn, as painful as like graduate level finance is, I needed that, and it changed the way I viewed things. And that shift in how I perceived the world and businesses has been completely a game changer. And I'm not saying that everyone needs to go get a master's degree. That is not the message I'm saying. The message I'm saying is that in order to grow how you think about things, you need to seek the knowledge to speak the language of how businesses work.
Yep.
And that's not a TikTok influencer. That like this is like real textbook stuff, like cash conversion cycles and, you know, different things like how you mentioned about revenue segments and even billing segments and all these other things, is that it is a little complicated. And there is, you know, ratios that are very like heavy to learn, but you just need to understand what they are in a marketing and operations framework. You need to understand what they are, why they matter, and how your actions impact them. You don't have to memorize the ratios. You can Google those later. Yeah. But you need to know they exist. Yeah. And you need to understand that that's the North Star that keeps the business open. If you cannot keep the business open, you have no business. Your job is gone. Everybody's job is gone. The economy collapses. Right. You need to understand how business works. And there is never a department in any organization that is worse off for having that knowledge.
Yep, I agree. I completely agree. I graduated. I did not get my MBA. I chose to abstain from that path.
and you were probably smarter for it. Like, it's not, it's not the keys to the kingdom. It was when we were children.
Yeah. I would venture to say that is holding true. I find a lot of very talented individuals who are certainly not MBA grads that have amazing leadership roles and earning, you know, potential and are earning very well, you know, lifestyles and salaries and things like that. But I did graduate from a business school. So I was taking finance and accounting and all that other stuff. And I didn't realize how helpful that really was in my trajectory of where I ended up going in my career as truly as a MOPS and sort of marketer, not the CEO role that I have today, right? Which of course all that stuff was helpful for this, but really it makes a huge, huge difference. And just like putting some more like context around, or like, you know, for the sake of example or what have you, I'll do the best I can. If you are able to have a healthy conversation with the finance team about, let's just call it like your healthiest customers, right? Like you think about your market segmentation from the top of the funnel all the way through. If you also were to look at, well, which cohorts of our customers pay on time the most frequently, right? Or where do we get more margin from working with a certain kind of customer? If you're in a services business or what have you, right? It may influence, and I guarantee it is influencing at the executive level, how they're thinking about, well, we need to sell to more enterprise because we make a lot more money. At least maybe that's what finance is telling you, right? But when you're able to like see into that revenue recognition period and understanding like, oh, those kinds of customers convert really efficiently through the funnel and they pay us, that's a win. How do we find more of those? How do I report that back to the marketing and sales teams, right? It's like, here's what they look like, their general footprint on company size, et cetera. That's a new way to think about segmentation that if you don't have access to the data, or at least access to the team, like you're not going to be able to do it. So it helps you in lots of ways, right? You understand how the business makes money. You understand how to have conversations, which is a thing that you've been doing in your career anyway, because as an ops person, you have to understand sales and marketing and customer success. So it's like, all you're really missing now is finance. Like, go get it, you know? Yeah.
And like you said, they're hungry for that conversation. There's no one in finance that doesn't want to know like these details.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're like, why do we have, you know, the CFO wants to cut like one tool from the stack? Because it's like, doesn't that do the same thing? I just looked at the feature list on the website and it's like, whoops. No, that's not the case, right? Just because it offers the feature doesn't mean that's actually the one that we use, nor like the best one for our business because of our unique go-to-market, right? So, yeah. I've seen that happen so many times.
Well, and it's an easy trap to fall in, right? Because they're not the tech expert. They're not the person that like have to deal with it when the data doesn't flow between two things that are like not friendly with each other.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I think that is like a lot of really great insight is that, you know, it does help you. And we could chase rabbit holes, like talking about like loss leaders, you know, oh, well, we have this product that we lose money on, but then it brings us this other margin. You know, it starts the conversation to a much deeper thing. If we were going to look towards the future, where marketing is going versus where it should go, they're not always the same things. What are your thoughts on that? Like, where do you think MOPS marketing in general is heading?
I think you can't escape the reality of AI is abundant and accessible. I think that MOPS has an opportunity to, and I'm really just echoing like what our community is talking about. Like this isn't so much me as it is me borrowing from people that are talking about this stuff. I think you have a really unique opportunity to establish a really good process for leveraging components of AI in your go-to-market efforts, right? And truly understanding like the how and when and where to deploy it. And then again, owning it like a part of the product tech stack and saying, okay, I'm going to enable you, I'm going to train you, and I'm going to show you how to best leverage this to create more efficiencies to drive more pipeline. I think we will see some things happen in the AI sort of landscape as it relates to some of the marketing automation practices and things like that. Imagine, you know, as a MOPS person, I can now sort of use words and just be like, hey, I want to run a 3-branch like logic campaign to these specific segments, and I need the workflow to do this, this, and this on this date or whatever. Right? And it's just like, cool. And it like spits it out for you.
Yeah.
The reality though is that you have to know what to ask, right? And your job in MOPS is to understand the systems and the unique fingerprint of your business to be able to ask it those questions to enable you to move faster, right? So like, I don't think that stuff's going to remove your job, right? By any stretch. You might not have to put as many hands on keys and, you know, hands on the mouse to like literally build the workflow, but you'll have a really good opportunity to leverage that kind of technology to its fullest. And I think it's yours to own. A number of us in the community think that it's yours to own, right? Paul Wilson's a great champion of that message right now. So I borrow a lot from our conversations privately and then publicly.
That's fair. And I mean, it is trend spotting, right? It is spotting, you know, what's popular amongst the kind of segment at large. And that's fair. I think that, you know, that's definitely one of those uses of AI. We talk a lot about like AI because how can we not? Yeah. But, you know, I think that that's a really like fair real life scenario in which it's very relevant and it is being adopted. And if it's not being adopted and implemented today, then it will be very soon.
Yeah.
All right. We got one question left. Behind the curtain, what is a question someone should ask you, but they don't? And this can be taken a couple ways. Sometimes it's, hey, everyone comes to me asking about XYZ. They're missing the boat. They really need to start at ABC. Like they're too far down the road. They need to ask me this other thing. They just have the wrong question. Or it can be taken as, what is something about you as a human that like you just want to talk about more because you're passionate about it and you just want more opportunities to talk about it?
Oh, really good question. I would say
it's such a whale. No one knows it right away.
Good question. I would say people don't really ask me like what does it really take to like build a community-led organization. I get it. You might think it comes up fairly frequently, but really just more on like the personal level. Like, what does it sort of take to do this stuff? How does that impact your personal life, the community that you serve? What are the trade-offs that you make? All of that kind of stuff. And I can talk for days about, you know, what and why and all of that stuff. I think, you know, it sort of goes to the larger question that a lot of organizations have around like, should I build a community for my business or not? And stuff like that. I'm always happy to talk shop about that stuff. But there's quite a bit that goes into really thinking through like the unique kind of structure and organization and value that you want to bring to the people that, you know, you're building for. And generally speaking, like people don't ever try to unpack too much. And maybe it's because I'm doing a pretty good job of like sharing stuff. I'm pretty transparent when it comes to like, you know, we hosted a $1 million conference last year. We had never done $1 million in revenue, right? Like how the hell do you even do this? And you know, I did a blog post about it, right? I'd rather people just understand that we're doing the best we can and what it really takes to do these things. And I don't know that, you know, I'm always happy to talk about it one-on-one, privately, sometimes in public to an extent, right? Always down to share sort of the nitty-gritty of all this stuff because it's my passion. It's also touches my personal life like very heavily. My wife's like, all we ever talk about is marketing ops. It's like, sorry, you know, but she also loves it. So, and don't get me wrong, we do talk about our kids a lot. So
the kids, they pop in occasionally.
Yeah. I think we were watching some Netflix show or meme or something. I don't even know the other day. And it was like, it was totally a Netflix series. And It was funny, like the couple had like gotten a weekend away from their kid, and then like within 5 minutes of sitting next to each other, they were like instantly like talking about their child. And it's like, no, that's real life. Like, even when you have a moment to step away for your own personal time, like you inevitably start talking about your family and stuff. So it's kind of funny.
Yeah,
Anyway,
I that
total rabbit hole.
you know what? I think that is very, very accurate because we are talking about a mom's thing, and we like, as parents, like you they're so entrenched in your being that you're like, yeah, and then my kid, because there's like, I don't think it's fair to separate like parenthood and professional life. Like they're very overlapping. And if you don't think you're good at sales and you have convinced your child to go to bed on time for 7 days straight, you are good at sales. I'm sorry to break it to you, but you somehow you did it.
You made it happen. That's a good, that's a really good analogy.
Like it's not that you know, maybe you should be a motivational speaker. I don't know.
So funny.
But as someone that's, you know, seeing your community from the outside, I can tell that, you know, it takes a lot of time and effort and intentionality and work. That community did not happen by accident. And it is well done, and it is a high quality community. And
Thank you.
so you can tell, you're welcome. You can tell because people are engaged with it and they're active and they talk about it when you're not around at other things. And that's like, that's the warm fuzzies that you get when you do something well.
Yeah, for
But
sure.
that's, you know, that's your brand, that's your reputation. So I always like to share compliments when I've got them, and very specific ones at that. And it's a really, really well done community.
Well, thank you.
You know, maybe back in the early 2010s or even earlier than that, like people used to call a community a Facebook group they slapped up, and you know, everyone just says like, oh, you know, I found a Disney pass holder, you know, thing. Like, oh, who's at the park today? That's not the same.
Yeah, not the same thing.
It's not the same. If someone wants to join your community or find out more about you or come to any upcoming events, where can they find more information?
For sure. Marketingops.com is the home of all the things. They can join the Slack community. We do have a membership program where you can pay to become a member. We would love to have you as a paid member. It unlocks additional benefits. At the moment, we still do have the free access to a lot of things, so take advantage of that. We're toying with like how the future of our membership program will look as we enter 2025. And then our conference is coming up in about 4 weeks, actually. So if you can come hang out with us at Mopsapalooza live in person or online. It is a community-led event. It is all expert speakers from their own experiences sharing the things that they've learned to try to help accelerate your learning curve. We don't sell like stage time, so it doesn't really feel like a pitch slap the entire time you're there, which is exactly the kind of conference that I would have really appreciated going to earlier in my career. And so we endeavored to build that. And we would love to have you there. It's November 4 through 6 specifically is when we're hosting that. So tickets are going fast, but we'd love to have you there.
And that's in Anaheim, California, for those
Yeah.
that
Yeah,
want to
it's
go
in
in person.
Anaheim, right behind Disneyland, if you want to head over to Disneyland with us afterwards. We do go on Thursday after the event.
Well, there you go. All right. And if you also want to find him, he's on LinkedIn. And that's where I slid into his DMs. It's like, hey, I'm sorry, I don't know you yet. And
I'm so glad we know each other now, too.
yeah, now it's official.
Yeah.
I'm excited about the work that you're doing. If anyone has any questions for me or wants me to somehow answer some of these things, I'm available at info@markigy, markigy.com, or also chronically online on LinkedIn as well, or Slack. I'm in front of my computer. Where else do we work?
Thanks,
Thank you so much.
everybody.